Today is the 29th of April, 2020. And the so manyth day of lockdown. And I need to tell you that the sun is shining at last, Poplar Grove. And the veld is radiantly white. And my wife has put your names on a little paper heart on each cushion in the zendo with a little flower. So it feels as if you're all looking at me. And it's much more intimidating than you are in person. But we're very pleased to be thinking of you, and that's what she's very good at. And of course it makes us sad as well, and determined to practice as strongly as we can with you in whatever form you appear. Because we know that if we fall asleep, you will come and haunt us. So yesterday I talked a little about the wonderful phrase, sitting wholeheartedly in the middle of your life. And how, if we can begin to get the sense of that in our own practice, that we begin to develop a direction in our life that is not thrown off course by all the content of our self, of our attachment self. As they say in the famous old poem, the blue sky is still there behind the white clouds. And the blue sky does not hinder the white clouds. But that's perhaps a talk for one of the other days. The main thing is that we begin to get a sense of the enduring quality of our practice. As we sit, as we keep on practicing in the midst of whatever happens in our life, then our practice can become very strong. So that's what we looked at yesterday, I think. And today I'd like to take that one step further and look at a story that appears in the book that I've been reading called Opening the Hand of Thought. And it's the story of a Zen master in China by the name of Guixing, G-U-I-X-I-N-G. And this story is not in one of the major koan collections, but it's something that comes from one of Dogen Zenji's writings called Regulations for Eihei Monastery, the Eihei Shingi, in the section entitled Regulations for the Officers. Slightly obscure document. But it has the story which he goes into at some length, and I'm just going to read you the beginning of that, and then we'll have a look at it together. Guixing, a Zen master in Sichuan, China, was noted for his severity in training his disciples and for simplicity and frugality in his own daily affairs. He was highly respected by the monks who practiced under him. When Zen masters Fa Yuan and Yuhuai of Tianyi were young practitioners, they travelled a long way with some other young monks just to train under Guixing. It was the dead of winter when they arrived, but Guixing only shouted at them and told them to go away. On top of that, he threw water on them to get them to leave. Their robes were completely drenched and they were frozen. Everyone else left angrily, but Fa Yuan and Yihui simply straightened their robes and sat zazen. Guixing shouted at them again, "Haven't you guys gone yet? Get the hell out of here or I'll beat you up." So that's the beginning of the story. In the book of Uchiyama Roshi, he then discusses the story, but he discusses a later aspect of that story. And I'd like to start just there for today. And I'd like us to look at it as koan, to see how easily we get attached to whatever our reaction is to a story. And how when we get attached, our experience of the blue sky gets covered up. Even though in theory, of course, and in fact, the blue sky is always there. Our experience of it disappears when we get caught up in our judgments and reactions. So in this story, the two young monks, whose names you don't have to remember, or better put, whose names I can't remember, arrived with a whole bunch of enthusiastic monks eager for the teachings of this legendary Zen master, Guixing. And Guixing just tells them to go away, threatens to beat them up, throws cold water all over them, won't give them any food, even if they've come traveling for months to get there. And in our reaction to this story, we immediately feel that the Zen master is unduly harsh, that he is not showing any sympathy, that he's not giving any encouragement. He's simply slamming the door in their face. And by all modern measurement, he was being abusive. He was abusing his situation, his power, his position. And if that happened in contemporary South Africa, somebody would have gone off to the Human Rights Commission and laid a complaint, and it would have gone to the Equity Court, and there would have been a kind of scandal. There are so many reasons for our modern sensibility to want to make things easier and more polite and more encouraging. I certainly have that built into my sense of response to this story. It's something I've absorbed from my society, from my upbringing, perhaps even in my genes, I don't know. But certainly it's the way I would look at a story like that. And so we begin to debate internally or amongst ourselves as to who was right and who was wrong. And if I was one of those monks, would I have left in the face of this abuse, or would I have just sat there and refused to go, like the two monks in the story? And the monks who left and went to study elsewhere, one has an understanding of them. One perhaps has a sense that because of the way the story is told, the two monks who stayed are there to teach us a lesson about perseverance of some kind. And then we look at the Zen master himself. You know, is he trying to teach people a lesson? Is he weeding out the weak students? Is he trying to test people, what's going on here? And in all of this discussion, we are being, I think, sidetracked from the essential matter of the story. And the essential matter, if I can be this adamant, is how do I wake up in each moment of my life? So the question then is, if you were a young monk coming to study, how would you respond? How do you wake up in that moment? In a moment of great discouragement, in a moment of physical and verbal abuse, how do I wake up right then? That is what the story as koan is asking of us. Not which one is right, which leaving or staying, or whether the Zen master is to blame for this or that, or how bad it was, or how difficult it was, or how great it was even. How do I wake up in that situation? And that's what makes these stories exciting. It gives them... There's a freedom in looking at it that way. Suddenly I don't have to decide who's right and who's wrong and what should have been done or what shouldn't have been done. But the question is simply, in this moment of the story, how do I wake up? There are two... short anecdotes from my own life as a monk that I'd like to just remember here with you. I was ordained a monk with an elderly Japanese Zen master from the Rinzai tradition in about 1983. And I spent the customary 3 years there in a very traditional Japanese style a monastic environment. But when I got there, I was astounded at how it was, how disciplined it was, how contrary to many expectations that I have had, it was. And at first I thought everyone was completely mad. And everything they did there, and the way they did things, was mad. And then I decided that it was me that was mad, just for being there. And I started needing to escape. I never really reached a point where I thought that we weren't mad. But what I did realize was that I was not free to leave until I did not need to leave. That as long as I was reacting and squirming and struggling and kicking and shouting, internally at least, in this situation, as long as I was doing that, any action that I took to leave would be done as a running away and not as a leaving out of some freedom or discernment. I eventually stayed. But that moment of realizing that I had to stay at least until I stopped wanting to run away was really important for me. The other story about Sasaki Roshi is also really instructive here. A difficult story. It was many years after I'd left, decades, when a scandal broke about Sasaki Roshi wanting to have some kind of sex with his female students during interviews. And stories started pouring in, women started telling what had happened, people started reacting very strongly. It was at a time when there were other scandals breaking in the American Sangha. And with that rather typical pair of attributes in North American society of license and Puritanism, this kind of caught flame. And I happened to be told about this and went on to some documents that were being circulated at the time. And the fury was absolutely astounding. People were demanding that Sasaki Roshi be hauled before various tribunals. They demanded that he be sent back to Japan. He was now, I think, already over 100 or thereabouts. There was a demand that all the people who were monks at that time or senior officials should be held to account. The women who were involved were pilloried and blamed by others. Those that condoned what was going on or didn't turn the other way were being blamed. Those who spoke out were being blamed. It was a it was a horrifying kind of scene to come across. It was like something out of Macbeth. Just judgment and blame and ridicule and scorn and mutual demolition was going on there. And for me, this was astounding. I, of course, reacted quite strongly in a whole lot of directions, I think. And then two abiding feelings seemed to surface and stay there. And one was just a great sadness at something that had just gone terribly wrong and caused suffering in almost every perceivable direction. And the other was, I asked myself, what happened to the practice in the midst of this reaction? What happened to the practice? It felt like it had disappeared. And that brings me back to the story of Guixing's abuse of his guests, of his guest monks, so many centuries earlier. That in our need to find right and wrong and judge and see who is correct and that, we lost the question of how do I wake up in this moment? In the Sasaki Roshi scandal, as it was named, from the outside looking at this, how do I wake up? And there again, it felt to me as if just this great sadness for all this that had happened was my way in. That only when I got in touch with that was I able to feel for the students and the people involved in the discussion, well, not the discussion, the warfare, and for Sasaki Roshi himself, whose long life just tumbled. Again, we can come back to the right and wrong of it later, but that was my feeling. And then I felt, okay, I can own this as part of my practice. And of course, in one quite strong sense, going into an interview with a Zen master or teacher who abuses you in that way, or who treats you in that way, let me say, the question then is, how do I wake up in that moment? How do I take responsibility for my life in this moment? That's the real question for each of us. And often, as we know, we fail. We get confused. We get overcome by some part of our attachment life that masks the blue sky. And then we start again. And being in interview with Sasaki Roshi, and in that situation, being in interview with anybody else, being in intimate connection with a spouse, with a colleague, with a policeman, with a robber. With a doctor, whoever it may be, whatever we think of the right and wrongs of a situation, the question is, how do I wake up in that moment? And sometimes the situation demands us to be very strong and very clear. And that's what this blue sky practice is about. Of course, once we respond like that, we are able to be quite clear about this is right, this is wrong, I accept this, I don't accept that. But the point is that that judgment comes from the blue sky, from the wake-up moment, from what Hongzhi calls the open field. And then we are able to be very clear, this is unacceptable. And to be fearless in our response and to take whatever consequences that is. We stay, we come again, we leave, we do something else. It doesn't matter which it is so much as where does that response come from. So the story of Guixin and the young monks who wanted to study with him, who he abused so strongly. In that story, some left, some stayed. And it's not about which is correct so much as were each of them able to wake up in that moment. Whether you wake up and stay, whether you wake up and go, the wake-up is the turning moment, turning point in that story. In each story that we live, and this is particularly relevant for us in times that are difficult as they are at the moment. When things are difficult, our practice is even more important so that we can wake up as best we can. And when we don't, the willingness to just start again means that we never lose the blue sky, whatever happens. Thank you very much.